Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller. Today we're going to start off with a recipe for a classic Cobb salad, one of my fave things. When I'm considering recipes I might share with you all, there are lots of foods that I arbitrarily rule out. Sandwiches? Nope, with rare exception. Who needs a recipe for slapping things between two pieces of bread? Fruit salad? Oof, no. Again, unless you're doing something fancy to it, I'm pretty sure people can find their own path to a chopped fruit in a bowl. So when I got to thinking about making an old-school Cobb salad a couple of months ago, I quickly rejected it because, given the Cobb salad's ubiquity on lunch menus everywhere, who doesn't know how to make it? As it turns out, someone does not. Last month, at a restaurant in New Jersey, both my mother and I ordered Cobb salads. My mother, the small version, along with a cup of soup, and myself, the regular one, with no soup. When the waiter brought out a bowl that was a third the size of the table, I groaned and tried to shuffle objects around on a table to accommodate it. What is up with these ridiculous portion sizes? I complained as usual. Oh, little did I know, people, little did I know, because the waiter next brought out a bowl I can barely describe. Imagine the bowl you would take down to make a salad for 12 people, or a vessel large enough for this guy to take a nap in, or this bowl with a diameter so staggering that would only fit part if part were hanging off the table. This was my entree Cobb salad. And with those acres of iceberg, not a speck of bacon was to be found. So let's talk about Cobb salad, the original old school way, the way I really wish it would have been, with bacon. Like any food with a long past, there are dueling versions of how it came into existence. What most agree on is that the Cobb salad was invented at the Brown Derby restaurant in Hollywood in 1937, and it has some connection with the Brown Derby's owner, Robert Cobb. Whether Cobb, on a hungry prowl, pulled this and that from the fridge and swiped bacon from a line cook to satisfy his cravings, as Arthur Schwartz insists, or whether a chef at the restaurant created the salad to cheer Mr. Cobb up when he returned to work, hungry and irritable, after a dentist appointment, as his widow says it came to be, will likely never be known. What few disagree on is the ingredients list. A mix of iceberg, romaine, and watercress, heaped with avocado, blue cheese, chicken, chives, hard-boiled eggs, and tomatoes. And bacon. Look, okay, I'm almost over it. Here's the recipe, classic Cobb salad, adapted barely from Savour, S-A-V-E-U-R. Serves 4 to 6. The dressing, heads up, I found I only needed half of this. So 3/4 cup of canola oil, 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil, 1/4 cup of red wine vinegar, 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, 3/4 teaspoon of dry mustard, 1/2 teaspoon of Worcestershire, 1/4 teaspoon of sugar, 1 clove garlic, minced, kosher salt, and freshly ground black pepper to taste. For the salad, you'll need 1/2 head of iceberg lettuce, cored and shredded, 1/2 head of romaine lettuce, chopped, 1/2 bunch of watercress, some of the stems trimmed and chopped, 2 ounces of blue cheese, crumbled, we use a Stilton, 6 strips of cooked bacon, roughly chopped, 3 hard-boiled eggs, peeled and cut into 1/2-inch cubes, 2 medium tomatoes, peeled, seeded, and cut into 1/2-inch cubes, 1 boneless, skinless chicken breast, cooked and cut into 1/2-inch cubes, 1 avocado, peeled, pitted, and cut into 1/2-inch cubes, kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper to taste, and 2 tablespoons of chives, minced. To make the dressing, you're going to combine the canola oil, olive oil, vinegar, lemon juice, mustard, Worcestershire, sugar, and garlic in a blender. Puree the ingredients to make a smooth dressing and season with salt and pepper. Set the dressing aside. To make the salad on a very large platter, you're going to combine the iceberg and romaine lettuces along with the watercress. Arrange the blue cheese, bacon, eggs, tomatoes, chicken, and avocado on top of the greens in neat rows. To serve, drizzle the salad with dressing and season with salt and pepper and chop with chives. Alternatively, toss everything together in a bowl. As far as doing ahead, salad dressing keeps covered and refrigerated for up to 1 week. Individual ingredients, except the avocado, which is too prone to browning, can be prepped and chopped and kept in separate containers in the fridge until you're ready to assemble the salad. However, no doubt due to the sturdiness of two-thirds of the lettuces, I found that the entire assembled salad kept surprisingly well wrapped in plastic in the fridge for a few hours. As far as peeling a tomato, you can cut an X in the bottom of each tomato and blanch in a large pot of boiling water for 10 seconds, and then immediately transfer with a slotted spoon to an ice bath to cool. Slide the skins right off, starting at the X. Completely befuddled by the need for this step, then just go ahead and skip it. Next, we have another kind of salad, just to balance it out a bit, arugula, potato, and green bean salad. I wasn't kidding last week when I said that I have staged an intervention with myself and am trying my hardest to cook more things at home that can be even loosely construed as dinner. I mean, somehow the farmers markets are bursting with beans and greens and peppers and potatoes and peaches, and I ate an average pad thai for lunch and it doesn't even compute. But I still only want simple food. When the food is this fresh, little needs to be done to make it stand out, which is perfect as I'm exactly lazy enough right now that I barely want to fuss. I saw this recipe from Martha Stewart a few weeks ago when I was trying to dream up a potato salad that wasn't so weighty. Basically, I wanted my potatoes, but I didn't need them swaddled in mayo or sour cream or chopped eggs and pickles, at least not every day. And this deliciousness totally fit the bill. Sharp arugula, barely cooked green beans. I'm seriously addicted to green beans this summer. Coins of fingerling potatoes, and my favorite, toasted walnuts, and a lightly creamy walnut vinaigrette. It's a potato salad, sure, but a potato salad fit for weekday nights, like after the gym, with a couple of beach weekends on the horizons. Just because one looks like they swallowed a beach ball doesn't mean that they have to eat like it every day, right? Here's the recipe for arugula, potato, and green bean salad with a creamy walnut dressing adapted from Martha Stewart. This makes 8 small salads or 4 larger ones. You'll need 1 ounce of walnuts, it's about a third of a cup, 1.5 pounds of fingerling potatoes cut crosswise into 1/2 inch thick rounds, 6 ounces of haricot verts or other green beans trimmed and cut into 2-inch segments, 2 tablespoons of white wine or other mild vinegar, 2 tablespoons of plain yogurt, 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard, 1 teaspoon of coarse salad, 1 teaspoon of coarse salt, freshly ground black pepper, 2 tablespoons of walnut oil, and 3 ounces of baby arugula. You're going to preheat your oven to 375 degrees and place the walnuts on a rimmed baking sheet and toast in the oven until fragrant, about 8 minutes. Let cool slightly and then coarsely chop and set aside. You're going to bring a medium saucepan of water to a boil, add potatoes, and cook until tender, about 10 minutes. Using a slotted spoon, transfer the potatoes to a colander to drain and cool and then set aside. Prepare an ice water bath and set aside. Return the pan of water to a boil and then add green beans and cook until tender and bright green, about 3 to 4 minutes. Using a slotted spoon, transfer to the ice water bath to stop the cooking and then drain. Whisk together the vinegar, yogurt, mustard, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt in a small bowl. Season with pepper. Add oil in a slow, steady stream, whisking until emulsified, and set the dressing aside. Arrange the arugula, potatoes, and green beans on a platter and season with the remaining 1/2 teaspoon salt and 1/4 teaspoon of pepper. Drizzle with dressing and sprinkled with toasted walnuts and toss to coat. Our next recipe is Turkey Meatloaf for Skeptics. Meatloaf has a PR problem. It took me a while to come around to it. I didn't grow up eating it, and certainly nothing about the name, a loaf of meat, convinced me I was missing a thing. But slowly I have tiptoed into the light, and now I get it. It's not cute, but it's objectively delicious. Imagine if we only ate things that were camera ready. It would be a world without gravy, mushroom soup, and lopsided, made with love frosted cakes. We absolutely must not stand for that. But I'd only made meatloaves with either ground beef or ground pork, never turkey. Turkey, which I suspected would be too dry or bland for any recipe to overcome, was the final frontier. And I tried it a whole bunch of ways before realizing that what I wanted most on top was not strips of bacon or a thick layer of ketchup, but a simple barbecue-type sauce. In the oven, it gets glossy and dark, and it goes really well with crushed ranchy potatoes, recipe follows, unlike their mashed counterparts. Crushed potatoes are full of contrasts, big and small chunks, some parts puddled with cream, some parts saltier, and that slight chaos of forkfuls plays well off the reliable, steady slices of meatloaf. So this recipe is excerpted from my third cookbook, Smitten Kitchen Keepers. The top five photos were styled by Barrett Washburn, who can even make meatloaf look good. Here's the recipe. Turkey meatloaf for skeptics. Serves four, takes 25 minutes of prep and 35 minutes to bake. Source, Smitten Kitchen Keepers. Note, this is a small size meatloaf and it works for my family of four. It doubles easily either as two small loaves, baking time the same, or one larger freeform loaf that will take between 60 and 70 minutes in the oven. For the meatloaf, you'll need one medium yellow onion, roughly chopped, one garlic clove, smashed, one slim carrot, roughly chopped, olive oil, kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper, 1/2 cup of panko-style breadcrumbs, 1/4 cup of chicken broth, 1.5 teaspoons of tomato paste, 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard, 1 tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh flat-leaf parsley, 1 large egg, and 1 pound of ground turkey, preferably a mix of dark and light meat, or just dark. For the glaze, you'll need 1 heaped tablespoon of ketchup, 1 tablespoon of molasses, 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, 1 teaspoon of hot sauce of your choice, this is optional, and 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce. Kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper to taste. You're going to heat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. To prepare the meatloaf, you're going to lightly coat a 9 by 13 inch baking dish or small sheet pan with nonstick spray. Finely dice the onion, garlic, and carrot in a food processor or by hand on a cutting board, and then heat a large skillet over medium heat. Once the skillet is hot, coat the bottom with olive oil and heat it for a minute, and then add the vegetables. Season with salt and pepper and cook, stirring frequently until they begin to brown, about 7 to 10 minutes, and then transfer them to a large bowl. Add the breadcrumbs, broth, tomato paste, mustard, Worcestershire, parsley, 1 teaspoon salt and 1/2 teaspoon pepper, and stir to combine. Add the egg by beating it directly into the vegetable mixture. I like to use a fork. Add the turkey and combine just until the vegetable egg mixture is dispersed throughout the meat. Pat the turkey mixture into about a 4 by 8 inch shape in your prepared pan. To make the glaze, in a small bowl, you're going to combine the glaze ingredients and then brush or spoon the glaze over the meatloaf. Bake the meatloaf for 30 to 35 minutes until the internal temperature is 160 degrees Fahrenheit. If you don't have a thermometer, you can insert a knife into the center and hold it there for 10 seconds. You should feel no resistance, and when you pull it out, the blade should feel hot. Let the meatloaf rest for 5 minutes, and then cut it into 1-inch slices to serve with crushed potatoes. So here's the recipe for the crushed ranchy potatoes. This serves four, takes 45 minutes, and the source again is the Smitten Kitchen Keepers. You'll need kosher salt, 1.5 pounds of small red or Yukon gold potatoes, 1/4 cup of heavy cream, 1 garlic clove minced, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter cut into pieces, 2 scallions finely minced, the white and the green parts, 1/3 cup of sour cream, 2 teaspoons of white vinegar and freshly ground black pepper, 2 tablespoons of minced fresh flat leaf parsley or 1 tablespoon each parsley and dill. In a large saucepan, you're going to cover the potatoes with cold salted water and bring to a simmer. Cook, simmering until the potatoes are fork tender, about 20 minutes, and then drain. You can keep the potatoes warm until they're needed by letting them rest in the empty pot off the heat, covered with a lid, and then transfer to a bowl when you're ready to finish them. So in your emptied saucepan, you're going to heat the cream and garlic together until simmering. Keep a close eye on it to make sure it doesn't boil over, and then remove the pan from the heat and whisk in the butter until it melts. Stir in the scallions, sour cream, and vinegar, and season well with salt. I use up to 1 teaspoon of kosher salt here, and black pepper. In a large bowl, I use a fork or potato masher to smash each potato once or twice, but leave them mostly in craggy chunks. Pour the cream garlic mixture over them, add the herbs, and then season again with salt and several grinds of black pepper, and combine everything with 2 big folded stirs. I like these best with some pockets of the garlic cream not mixed in, and serve hot with the meatloaf. That sounds like a really yummy dinner for today and our big snowstorm that we're having. We're going to have a next recipe for bacon, egg, and leek risotto. Seeing as I once argued that rice pudding should be breakfast food, I shouldn't be any surprised that I'm now wondering if risotto could also be welcome in the earliest parts of the day. I mean, what if it contained bacon and eggs? What if I warn you that if you start making risotto with leeks and bacon and finish it with a fried egg, that you might not be able to go back to eating it another way? You can't say I didn't give you a heads up. I got the inspiration for breakfast risotto from an article I saw a few months back. Okay, it was many months, but every time I was about to make it, I found something better to do, like flossing or chasing my toddler around the apartment with a comb, trying to explain that he would one day thank me for not letting him leave the house looking like an unkept puppet. Eventually, I had to admit that the risotto, while lovely to eat when someone else makes it, is hardly my favorite way to dirty pots and pans. It's the stirring and also the starchiness. It's the sleepiness of the usual inclusions, maybe mushrooms, asparagus, and other delicately minded green things. And that always requires that you make something else, like a salad or maybe some protein, that will make it seem more of a balanced meal. Risotto, it is awfully demanding. Which is all the more reason that the risotto approximation of breakfast, replete with bacon, runny eggs, cheese, and leeks, is nothing short of brilliant. Of course, with my put an egg on it approach to turning anything, like fried rice, check, bean stew, check, into a meal, you probably already know that this needn't just be for breakfast or even lunch. It was, in fact, dinner for us the other night, a most luxurious one before we all hopped on a plane for a week on the beach. One I'm looking at now from a balcony while the other 2/3 of my family snore the afternoon away, all gritty toes and freckled noses. It's not at all hard to get used to. Here's the recipe, bacon, egg, and leek risotto, also known as breakfast risotto. This serves 6 small or 4 large servings, takes 1 hour, including prep. Source, Smitten Kitchen. This recipe was lightly refreshed in 2023. The changes, you can do up to 2 cups more broth, as I often needed it. There's no need to separately warm your broth for the stovetop directions, and the onions and leeks now cook together and stay in the pan the whole time. The butter is added in 2 parts, some for cooking and some to finish. And finally, I've added oven directions as I love how hands-off and easy it is. You'll need 1 cup, that's about 4 ounces of bacon or pancetta diced, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, divided, plus more to fry eggs, 2 large or 3 smaller leeks, quartered lengthwise, cleaned of grit and chopped small, 1/2 of a small onion or 1 large shallot, finely chopped, 2 cups of arborio carnaroli or another short-grained Italian rice, 1/3 cup of dry white wine or vermouth, 6 to 8 cups of low-sodium chicken stock or vegetable broth, 1 cup of grated fresh Parmesan cheese plus extra to finish, salt and freshly ground black pepper, and 4 to 6 large eggs if you want one per serving, and then minced fresh chives for garnish. This is optional. If you plan to follow the oven directions, you're going to heat your oven now to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Both methods begin on the stove. You're going to place your bacon or pancetta in a medium saucepan or deep saute pan, like 3 to 4 quarts, and turn the heat to medium high. Cook until the bacon or pancetta renders its fat and crisps. That'll be about 5 minutes, stirring as needed for even cooking. Remove with a slotted spoon to a towel-lined plate and set aside, leaving the drippings in the pan. Reduce the heat to medium and add 1 tablespoon of olive oil and 1 tablespoon of the butter to the bacon fat and heat until melted. You're going to add leeks and the onion and cook, stirring until softened and mostly tender, about 7 to 10 minutes. Add the rice and cook the sauté until slightly toasted, about 3 minutes. Add wine or vermouth and cook until it almost disappears. That'll be about 2 minutes. To finish on the stove, you're going to ladle 1 cup of broth into the rice mixture and simmer it until it absorbs, stirring frequently. Add the remaining broth 1/2 cup at a time, allowing the broth to be absorbed before adding more and stirring frequently until the rice is al dente, about 25 to 30 minutes. What you're looking for in a well-cooked risotto is a creamy but loose dish. When ladled onto a plate, it should spill into a thick puddle, not heap in a mound. You might need an extra splash of broth to loosen it. When you achieve your desired texture and tenderness, stir in the remaining 2 tablespoons of butter and 1 cup of Parmesan cheese. Season with salt and pepper to taste, and then ladle into serving bowls and sprinkle with crisp bacon or pancetta. To finish it in the oven instead of the stove, you're going to add 6 cups of broth to the rice mixture and turn the heat to high to bring to a simmer. Once simmering, cover with lid or foil if you don't have a lid and transfer it to the oven. And then bake the risotto in the oven for 20 to 25 minutes or until most of the liquid is absorbed but it looks a tiny bit watery. If the mixture looks dry once the rice is cooked, add more broth, 1/2 cup at a time, stirring to combine. What you're looking for in well-cooked risotto is creamy but loose dish, and when ladled onto a plate, it should spill into a thick puddle, not heap in a mound. Same instructions as before. And when you achieve your desired tenderness and texture, you're going to stir in the remaining 2 tablespoons of butter and 1 cup of Parmesan cheese. Season with salt and pepper to taste, and then ladle into serving bowls and sprinkle with crisp bacon or pancetta. For both methods, quickly in a small skillet, you're going to heat a pat of butter over medium-high and swirl it to coat the pan. You're going to crack 1 egg into the skillet, season with salt and pepper, and reduce the heat to medium. I like to cover the skillet with a small lid at this point, as it seems to help the egg cook faster and more evenly. In 1 minute, you should have a perfect sunny side up egg. Transfer to your first bowl of risotto and repeat with the remaining eggs. And garnish each with an extra bit of grated Parmesan and chives if you're using, and eat immediately. That is a yummy, yummy, rich dish. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller.